You're listening to the Infidelity and Beyond podcast. Each week, we talk about topics that focus on not only surviving, but thriving after being betrayed by a partner or spouse. It can be one of the most traumatic and lonely times of your life, and that's why we're here. So welcome. This is your safe space.
Hi, troops. Welcome back. Thank you for tuning in once again to the Infidelity and Beyond podcast. I hope you've had a great week. I'm recording this in sunny Adelaide this week whilst I visit my mum and my school friends. So a shout out to those lovely friends who support me by listening to this podcast, even though they are in happy marriages. And thank you to my friends for letting me record in their house. So again, lots and lots of thank yous to family and friends this week. Now, last week I talked about setting your intention for how you want to show up in life, really thinking about the future you and who you want to be. As with most things I talk about, this is relevant for your recovery, whether you stay with your partner or not. But in my opinion, it is so important that the rest of the time you have on this earth is fun and fulfilling and even better than you ever expected it to be. No matter what your situation in life, no matter if you stay with your ex, your partner or not, the rest of your life, you have the opportunity now to make it the best that you can be. And as for us betrayed, life has handed us a bombshell. It's exploded in the middle of everything that we thought was safe and true. And as with these types of disasters, the rebuilding process doesn't create exactly the same environment as it was before. It's giving us a bit of an empty slate, a bit of a clean slate. And what you do with it now, what we do with it now, is up to us. What I found liberating about it happening to me is that I felt like I didn't need to fulfill society's expectations of what I do and don't do anymore. So before, I did everything right, in inverted commas, and everything that was expected of me. I got married, I had kids, I got the house, I got the cars. And look, you know, it was things that I enjoyed and that I thought I wanted, and it was part of who I was, and I didn't hate them. But look what happened. I did everything that was expected and felt safe and comfortable. And that was actually an illusion. Now, couple that with the fact that I was nearing 50 at the time of my separation, and I realized that this could be an absolute gift of rebirth to me, of starting afresh, of life was entering a second phase in more ways than one. So, you know, you talk about the downward slope after 50. What if it's the upward slope after 50? And that's what you can do too. You can decide what is built from now on, and all previous bets are off, which is very, very exciting, but very, very scary. Now, one thing we as humans like is safety, and knowing what our life is and who we are, good or bad, is a very much of a comfort to us. So saying to ourselves that you can be who you want to be and make radical changes in your life anytime past our 20s seems to be a bit of a tough ask. It's funny, really, because we say that to, you know, kids and teenagers, etc., but something happens in our lives where we flick that switch and say, okay, that's too scary now, where I've decided my path and, you know, we're not going to do that anymore. So it's not an easy or calm or quiet path. But then again, recovering from infidelity is a pretty bumpy path to begin with, right? Now, there will be people in your life who won't like a new you. You're going to be a different parent. You're going to be a different friend. You're going to be a different daughter or son to your parents. You're going to be a different colleague than you are now. And they may embrace the new you. They may love it for you and become your biggest cheerleaders. They may worry about you, and I certainly get a lot of that, and I'm grateful for that worry. They may fight against the new you, or either overtly or subconsciously, or they may leave your life altogether. So building the new you not only takes that above the line thinking that we talked about a few weeks ago, you know, that ownership, accountability and responsibility. It's not just that, but it's a whole bundle of bravery too. But the cool thing is that the more you do something, the braver you are, the easier it actually becomes. The more you push through your fear and do things out of your comfort zone, the better you get at it. And I said this to my daughter the other day, and she's like, "Oh, Mom, that's so trite." And we used to hear that at school, but it's absolutely true. Feel the fear, but do it anyway. Now, when infidelity happened to me, I was pretty shell-shocked, as I've said, but I did not want this horrific thing that someone else had done to taint the rest of my life. And I was determined to fight my way out of it to a better place. Now, there were two parts to my all bets are off planning. So firstly, who I wanted to be when I was going through my separation and divorce, and secondly, who I wanted to be on the other side. Today, I'm just going to talk about who I wanted to be through the early stages, because that was a lot harder to be rational, reasonable thinking, and positive in such a tumultuous time. So in the early stages, when I was still in that ruckus phase I've talked about, it was a matter of survival. And looking back on it now, my ruckus lasted for about 6 months. And I'm defining my ruckus phase as that initial finding out and crisis emergency relief effort. I seem to remember very little happiness or joy in that time. Nothing felt settled. There was a new mini crisis seemingly every day, sometimes most weeks. It would pop up all the time and everything felt so topsy-turvy. I was really on autopilot for the normal parts of my life, like work and running a house and doing normal parenting and, you know, cleaning and all the rest of it, filling up your car with petrol, as all my effort and emotion was actually going into the separation planning and implementation. So I was there in body, but my mind was always thinking about the separation and what was going on. So I was in no state or mindset to be doing any long-term planning then. And you know, they, all of the professionals say this, all of the brain science says this, don't try and make long-term decisions in this crisis phase. But the thing is, there are decisions you do have to make. You know, you have to, if you are separating, you have to go through financial separation. You have to think about custody. You have to think about where you're living, etc. So you are having to make these decisions. And as I said, it was a matter of survival. And I've always tended to have a level head in crisis situations, but this tested me to my absolute limit. It was so discombobulating to be so emotional, so touchy, so shaky, so unreliable all the time. So, you know, flaky and you know, away, as I said, sometimes I felt like I was away with the Tweeties. And I remember missing a couple of meetings with a good friend and a colleague, which I never did, and especially with her. I have so much respect for her and what she does. And I pretty much broke down into tears because I was just acting so flaky. I mean, she was far more understanding of it than I was. But it was things like that that happened would make me even more determined not to let this crisis that's happened in my life to bring me down and to change me for the worse. So who did I want to be at that time? Did I want to be amicable, friendly, antagonistic, fearful, argumentative, nasty, vengeful, hateful? You know, who did I want to be? Now, a lot of you will resonate with this and say, yeah, that's exactly what I did. It was easy to daydream about the hateful and how to be hateful and vengeful. In fact, sometimes it's what got me to sleep some nights, just dreaming of how karma would bite my husband in the ass. But in the end, the key questions were, what was going to serve me best in this time and what outcome did I want from this? If I had let my negative, angry, hurt and hateful thoughts and feelings rule my actions, what type of outcome was I going to get? I was pretty sure I'd be broke because, you know, I'd really lawyer up and try to punish him and he would lawyer up and punish me back. And you hear of stories of some very hateful divorces where no side wins in that situation. It would also hurt my kids even more. They were already going through their own grief and anger, so being a negative role model for them and for them to worry about me and to see me going through such a hateful stage would have made things worse as well. And I'm also pretty sure that if I'd indulge my hate and vengefulness, I'd finish up even angrier than when I found out. So I actually sat down one day and visualized it all. I went through scenarios and phone calls and everything I wanted to say and do in these scenarios, but I ran them from a third-party observer's perspective. So I watched as I went through all of these. I could see myself hunched over, twisted, sad and in pain. I saw the anger and hate on my face. And there was one time when I was, you know, watching myself in this third person, and I realized I would literally turn into this bitter, twisted, and very wrinkly shell of a person. It's going to be very bad for my skin. And that was everything I was scared I was going to turn into. So I was like, right, Kate, if you go on this path, you will actually be achieving exactly what you don't want to be. Like, it's exactly who you don't want to be. So you can't indulge yourself in this. So then I sat down and I wrote out some key things about what I did want from the separation and divorce. So here are the ones that I wrote. I found them in my journal. I wanted to be living independently in the same area I was already in. I wanted the kids' lives at least disrupted as possible. I wanted the least amount of money spent on lawyers. I mean, that's a given, really. I wanted the least amount to do with my husband. I wanted him as much out of my life as possible at the end of it all. So I wanted it nicely, you know, tied up with string as much as possible, that I wouldn't have to interact with him ever again for, you know, any logistics, etc. You know, we had one child who was still a minor, so we absolutely have that we have to manage through. But for everything else, I wanted him out of my life as much as possible. And I wanted space to be able to feel happy again and build a new life. So I didn't want this to consume me. Once I've written these down, I use them as my guiding light, my guiding principles for every interaction I have with my ex. As I've said before, we can control our own actions, but we can't control others. So as reasonable and as focused as I was and as you can be, it won't guarantee your ex will be. There were times when I literally bit my tongue so I wouldn't say something I regretted, that I wouldn't bite back when he was reacting emotionally, that I wouldn't say things that I would regret later. And as hard as it was, and it was hard, and I wasn't perfect at it, and there were times I did bite back, having the end goal in mind helped me not to have some stand-up fights. It helped me negotiate reasonably. It helped me walk away and cool down when things got tough. It helped me ignore nasty texts. Now, bearing in mind that I did get advice from lawyers and financial advisors during this time, so I wasn't just going it alone, but with advice behind me and an attitude of let's get this done with the least amount of angst possible, it actually diffused a lot of the antagonism from the other side, as well as reducing my own. And what I have found interesting and talking to others, they've experience this as well, is you know, when your ex has nothing to bounce off of, when they feel their attitude and behaviors aren't affecting you, they lose a lot of their emotional power over you. And I don't mean give in to everything that they're asking for. I mean know what you want, what's reasonable, get advice from professionals and negotiate from there as unemotionally as possible. And I say that knowing that sometimes there's a huge amount of emotion in there. There will always be some partners who will just be out to screw you. I get that. And I've spoken again to women whose husbands were very nasty from the outset and obviously determined to punish them. And the irony of this does not escape me, that they play victim and they get nasty when they're the ones that have cheated. That is a whole other podcast in itself. We will definitely be talking about that. And when I have got a few guests lined up who are going to be talking about their experience of it as well, there's this blaming of us that comes through these types of negotiations and trying to punish us for just basically holding our boundaries and respecting ourselves. And it can get nasty from there. So what I would say to you is that if you're trying your best, you're being reasonable as possible, and you can just feel that they just don't want a bar of it, and they just want to really just be as nasty as possible and take as much from you as possible, do what they did. They had to lawyer up at that point, but not from a I'm going to get you back mindset, but from a I'm going to protect myself mindset. The thing is, however you get through your ruckus, you're going to feel beaten down, exhausted. And if you're anything like me, a shell of who you once were, you're going to feel quite empty. But actually, I would rather feel that than coming out of it with rage and anger as well. Like you've already got enough to deal with without coming out of it the other side with a whole bunch of bitterness and anger that just will not serve you. So I want to talk about some key tips around all bets are off during the ruckus rule. So in the ruckus, realize that you're highly emotional and therefore not in a space to be making good long-term decisions from an emotional standpoint. Visualize scenarios and outcomes. If you were to let your emotions run away with you, how do you think it would end up at the end of it, and how do you think you would feel at the end of it? So what I want you to feel here is the nastiness that I felt, so you know that that's exactly what you want to avoid. Write out what you want from the separation in positive statements, not just I don't want, but actually what I do want statements. So, you know, when you're going on holiday, you don't say I don't want to go to Perth. You say I'm going to Darwin. So that's what I mean. Not I don't want to feel nasty. It's I want to feel in control. I want to feel rational. Those types of statements. Number one key tip, protect yourself at all times. Absolutely. It's you don't know where or when things are going to come at you, but that is your absolute number one principle, is that you will protect yourself and your boundaries at all time. Do what's best for you and what's best for your mental health. How do you want to be at the end of this process? You're already tired. You don't want to come out of it bitter. Your partner has already done enough damage to your life. Don't let them damage your happiness after the ruckus. Now, with that being said, I'm off to go for a walk in the sunshine with one of my best friends in life and soak up and soak the joy of being alive and well today in my new life. So take care, and I'll chat to you next week.
You've been listening to the Infidelity and Beyond podcast. We're honored we're a part of your recovery journey and remind you to seek help from friends, family, and professionals when you need it.